Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Principle of Hospitality, the podcast. Now, we've had a collision of worlds, a joining of forces, a banding of brothers. Sash from Principle Design and me, Sean from Open Pantry Consulting, are pleased to announce this venture for 2021, Principle of Hospitality. Now, we know that food brings people together and promotes community. And at Principle of Hospitality, we are here to disrupt current perceptions of what the hospitality industry can achieve in today's ever-evolving and challenging environment. Now, that's why we've partnered with Chef's Hat on this Principle of Hospitality podcast. Now, if you didn't know, Chef's Hat is the largest family-owned and operated hospitality supplier in Australia. They strive to inspire cooks, chefs, bakers, and bartenders to deliver the best product with the best tools every day. So that's why we're so proud to partner with Chef's Hat, where the industry shops. Now let's get into today's podcast. I think you're really gonna enjoy it. Welcome to another Principle of Hospitality podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Babajun is a respectful term for an elderly, kind man, and as a result of this desire is something our next guest and Middle Eastern specialty chef, Kirsty Chaplius, hasn't looked back since the cafe opened in 2016 on Nicholson Street in Carlton North. Kirsty has a Greek background and more than 20 years experience in professional kitchens, including working for Gordon Ramsay. So I'm delighted to talk with her today with what I know will be a most inspirational and leading cafe, bakery and fresh food general stores in the country. Welcome to the podcast, Kirsty. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
It is it's an absolute delight to have you here. And when we caught up last week in Babajun, I was just – look, I'd heard so much about it since you guys have opened and I feel really, really – bad that I hadn't visited till last week. But God, I was blown away from a person who's been in hospitality a long time and just really understood what fresh food and what amazing cafes look like and bakeries looks like. So many concepts that you've got going on there. It's just a pleasure to have you here and to talk about that journey. So let's get into it. Like, you have been in the industry for a couple of decades, over a couple of decades. Like, how did you actually get started out and get into it?
So it's been a while. I don't want to exactly say the years because it'll say my age. But I had a part time job when I was a kid at school, and I was given the opportunity from the manager. He knew a chef, executive chef of a hotel, and I was enjoying cooking at this part time place. Mm-hmm. And he said they're looking for an apprentice.
Yep.
So I went to have a chat, and I thought it was an amazing opportunity. You know, I remember my dad saying no.
Why is that?
Oh, because he was a musician, so he was in the clubs and saw the chef there late night.
Oh,
and
I see.
Like, don't do it.
Yeah, right.
And my mum was like, no, this is good. And I guess back then, you know, I was good at school. I loved school, but I just really thought it was an opportunity that you can pass up.
Mm-hmm.
So I left school in year 11, halfway through year 11.
Wow.
And after about 3 months, I was like, I want to go back to school. But I pushed it out and I was there for 3 years at the hotel.
Wow.
Yeah, because, you know, and I was listening to someone else that you had on, Anna Povlu.
Yeah, Povlu.
Yep. Yeah, and she talked about the hotel culture.
Yes.
And it really made me realize that was an integral part of my training because there were so many facets to the hotel.
Yes.
So you did every section.
So I didn't get bored.
No, there was heaps to do, heaps to learn, heaps of sections to go through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back then they did ice carvings and winter Christmas and all those funny things. So you did a lot of pastry work, function work, larder, hots, you know, fine dining.
Mm-hmm.
And then from then I went and did cafe work.
Right.
And I really loved it was such a different vibe, hotels to
of course
cafes and restaurants. So
yeah,
did that, and then I worked at 1 Fitzroy Street for about 3 years with John Psarnas, and there's like three or four people that I'd say were you know, that you learn in progressions, you know, you learn in stages, and you go, oh, I can't believe I thought I knew so much. And then you meet someone that teaches you so much.
Yeah.
So that was that. And then I did cafe work again, and then I went overseas and did a bit of Gordon Ramsay, and that was, you know, he was never in the kitchen, but, you know, the vibe of the kitchen is
intense.
Intense. Yeah, it's pretty hard. So and just living in London is hard.
So did you work all through Europe or just mainly
just
in England?
Just in London, yeah. Just in England, yeah.
Cool.
And then came back and then started it all again.
What did you do when you first came back?
I worked with one of the guys that used to own Blue Train.
Right.
I can't remember his surname now. George wanted – it was – yeah, so he owned a place in QV. When QV had just opened.
Right.
I was the head chef there for about 6 months or something, and it was a pizza place, and it just – I was like, it's not really for me. And then I went to the Belgian. I met George Christopoulos, and I worked in the pastry section there.
Yes.
And then after that, I went to Elementari, worked there.
Wow.
So then I was just sort of finding my feet through cafes, I think, and – Elementari was another big sort of eye opener.
Yes.
To food.
Yes.
And being creative, like you could really be creative there. Yeah. It was when it was like way back. So when it was just the one shop and not renovated kitchen and all that stuff.
What did you enjoy about the cafes, if I can ask you?
I think it's freedom. It's a bit freer. It's fun. It's a bit family.
Right.
I felt like there was more like, you know, more culture and community.
Yeah.
You know, you made lots of friends.
Yeah, fair enough.
And there was more freedom in the cooking for me, especially Elementari.
Right.
And the places that I worked, I pretty much didn't have a menu.
Right.
We had a little place in Little Collins Street for a while that my friend had owned, and we changed the menu every day.
Wow.
And I love that. Like, it's just, you know, use what you've got. And I think that's something that chefs don't know how to do anymore. They don't know how to utilize what's in front of them. I mean, not all chefs, I shouldn't say that. I mean, just like young
chefs coming through. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. After that, I went and worked in Hillsville for about 3 years. I moved to Hillsville.
Wow.
And I worked at Giant Steps. Innocent Bystander. It was amazing. That was
as a bartender.
At Innocent Bystander.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I got a bartender. That'd be funny.
It was a winery. It was great. Yeah. It was amazing. And that's another community hub. Like, once you're in Hillsville, everyone, like your family.
Of course.
So that was really great. And I worked with Jared Hudson, who was actually a really great chef. Mm-hmm. And he opened Easy Tiger on Smith Street.
Wow. Yeah, right.
So back in the day. Did you ever go there?
Yes.
Yeah. So I worked there. I worked there for about the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I opened my own place in the city.
So what? Okay, it's in the city. Right. Yeah, so
the first place was in the city.
So what was that called?
The Workers Food Room.
Right.
Yeah.
And what drove you to do that?
I wasn't inspired to cook anywhere else. I just didn't feel like there was anywhere that I wanted. I didn't want to do nights anymore. I wanted a bit of a life. There was no place I really wanted to work. And I thought I was ready. I guess I.
Yeah.
And then when you start, you know you're not ready in business, you know.
Tell me what your first 3 months were like at that venue, being a business owner and, you know, obviously CBD venue and stuff. Like,
so stressful.
Yeah.
Like, forgot to pay my rent, like, you know.
to pay your rent.
Like, just not in my brain.
Yeah,
remember I've got to pay rent this month. And, you know, like.
Yeah.
I was grateful for the people that I had at the start because they helped me implement certain front of house procedures that I had no idea.
Like, right. Yeah, because you came from back of house,
just
right?
Just doing a float, you know, and a cash up sheet and, you know, just basic.
Yeah.
You know, fixing the till and, you know. So it was pretty hardcore. And then I had friends of mine from Hillsville start working for me, the head chef. And after 6 weeks, he was like, oh, I'm going to go back to Hillsville. And I was like, thanks. So, you know, you think you're supported, but you're never supported.
Yeah.
So from the get-go, I was, you know, thrown in the deep end.
Wow. And were you doing that solo? Did you have business partners? Wow. No, you were doing that solo.
Yeah, I've always done it by myself.
Wow. So how long were you there for?
4.5 years. It was great. It was beautiful. It was great. It was like brick and wood oven, had a wood oven.
Wow.
Had a fireplace.
Yeah.
It was about 40 seats.
Yes.
we did the similar concept of salads on the counter, pastries, everything made in house. Mm-hmm. But the feature was the wood oven. So we'd do a wood roast, a lamb shoulder, a chicken. It was beautiful.
Wow.
It's really good.
Like a 7-day a week venue?
It was Monday to Friday.
Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
Okay,
we
right.
tried Saturdays for a few years. Yeah, but yeah. It just doesn't work.
So a Friday night's kind of the vibe that would come.
Well, we tried it, but it was hard for me to shift that vibe, yeah. really. It wasn't – I'm not a – every place I've had has always been very like majority sales of food because I'm not a – you know, I'm not front of house. So I don't drive those cocktails. I mean, I try, but it's never been the, you know, the driving force. It's always been the food.
You've had that venue. You had that venue for 4.5 years. Like, what can I ask? What made you not have that venue anymore? Was it just a different change that you wanted?
Oh, it's personal, but sure. Yeah, I was. There's a few reasons. Rent was really expensive.
Sure.
I was working with someone who, was really emotionally draining.
Wow. Okay.
And my way of getting rid of him was to sell my business.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's how bad,
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Okay.
So what did Babajung come on after that?
Yeah, Babajung came on and I still took that person with me. So
right, okay.
I hadn't learned my lesson yet.
Yes.
And then after about 7 months of Babajung, I learned my lesson.
Right.
Yeah. I was like, okay, this is not working.
Understand.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's easy to look back and look at those decisions, right? Yeah.
Oh.
I've been in that place many times, so understand.
Very silly. But you learn, you grow, you know, you go through, you have to, I feel like I needed to go through, you know, you have to learn, you have to go through some hard things to know, you know, what you need and what you love and what makes you tick and.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So what did Babajung start at? Was it different than what it is now? I mean, you've obviously been having it since 2016. Like, that's a, you know, 5 years now. Yeah. That's a good amount of time.
Yeah, I think the initial concept for me was to go in to really showcase, because I had worked with so many of Gigi Bubba's chefs and Ish.
Yes.
I saw how great the food was, and it really, in Melbourne, you couldn't get a casual execution of that in a beautiful way, like good cheeses in the Goslemes or Borex or anything. Like, it was always cheap places. And I guess I wanted to showcase their food in a cool way and cooked well with good ingredients. So it started with that concept, and then it grew with a brunch menu and then, you know, that's really, people loved it.
Yes.
So, but it probably wasn't, like, looking back, it wasn't what we should have been pushing, because as a business, it didn't make us money. Like, we were so busy.
Yes.
But the costs outweighed that service.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, does that make sense?
It makes a heap of sense.
Yeah.
And you would have had a heap of people who were coming into the venue, or I'm sure patting you guys on the back and saying,
oh my God,
wow, this is going so well.
All the time.
Because you're full all the time. And then
no, like,
was it the service element? Was it the cost of goods? Was it the rent?
It was, no, the rent's always been so good.
Yes.
I always had the, you know, like 2% of my revenue
was
like, I've got it like so low.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But my staff costs and my cost of goods were stupid.
Yeah.
And you talk to accountants about, you know, oh, why aren't we making money? And they're like, oh, you need to open nights, or you need to open 7 days. Or,
everyone has an opinion.
You know, they always think you need to do more. But it was really, I had to do less.
Yeah.
And that didn't come from until I sat down with Leon.
Right.
You know, where he really gave me a lot of help and support and information, and sat down and we, you know, we did all the numbers together and we made a plan, and it was like, this, what am I doing? This is where the money's going.
Yeah.
For like 3 years probably.
Can I ask how that came about? And the reason why I ask that question with the conversation with Leon is because I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast, Kirsty, like, are thinking about their businesses, and I think pivotal moments really create, you know, good business decisions. And I like to sort of form out, like, who made those decisions with, like, my guests. Like, how did it come about that meeting happened with Leon? Like, Leon's been on, obviously, been on the podcast from Proud Mary, but how did that come about?
Well, lucky for me, I wasn't in this day, but I had a great manager who was great at chatting, and Leon had come in with his business partner. I think he was down from the US.
Yeah, right.
And I think this business partner had heard about my old part. He wasn't my business partner, but he used to work, Ish used to work for me.
Right.
So had heard that Ish had worked there and the food and la la, so they wanted to come in. So they came in for breakfast and my manager chatted to them and got his contact. And we just – and you know what Leon's like. He loves a chat.
Yes.
And I think maybe initially they maybe wanted me to take their coffee on.
Right, okay.
And I was very, you know, loyal to other people, and I was like, no. But he was just kind. And, you know, he was just –
he's brutally kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, this guy's like so good. So we just ended up becoming friends. We had a meeting, we have chats, and then after like, you know, 3 months, I felt loyal to him and I was like, oh, I'll take your coffee, you know?
Yes.
I'll put your coffee on. You know?
Yeah, right.
So that's how the relationship evolved.
Right. And was that sort of the first or one of the first times you'd really gone through a business planning kind of session? Yep. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting. So it took you to your second business to go through that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I don't even – what is it called? A SWOT?
Oh, SWOT analysis.
So I'd never done one.
Oh, really?
Never.
Wow. Okay.
I'm a chef.
Yeah, of course. Like, yeah, of course.
You know, it just like – you know, I'd read
where would you have got that skill from? Yeah.
Yeah, like I had – you know, I have friends that are lawyers and HR and stuff, and, you know, you'd have chats with them and, you know, try and build some sort of – support and information from the people you knew, but I'd never had like someone that I wasn't paying.
Yes. Yeah.
Help me.
Yeah.
Like literally sit down and give me hours of their time.
Sure.
Leon was the first.
Yeah, wow.
And that's how we went through and we worked out what was really the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what we were doing too much. So from that, I put in place, you know, a different menu. I changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pre-COVID. That was December. Oh, no, that was maybe 6 months or 5 months before COVID.
So the end of 2019. Yeah, right.
And so I restructured the menu and taken all the a la carte dishes off, and everything on the counter was on the menu now. So when people sat down, we still had specials and stuff, but I think I put 3 a la carte dishes on.
Right. And beforehand, like obviously now when you walk into Baba John, like it's like a general store kind of cross bakery, cross cafe kind of environment. Like did you have seating inside as well, more than what you've got now?
Yeah, so the layout was very different.
Yeah.
We had like church pews and tables all along that wall where the fridge and the shelving are now.
Yes.
And, you know, tables in the middle, and that bar that's across the room now was an L shape.
Right.
And then we didn't have the bread.
Yeah,
bread display either.
Yeah.
So it was you know, we had probably 25 to 30 seats inside with the
bench.
Right.
Okay. And then about 20 outside, right? 15 to 20
outside.
Yeah, about
15, 20 outside.
Yeah, right.
But we had a full-on menu, you know, and then I'd do lunch specials and then I'd do breakfast specials and then you do, you know, a $25 lunch special and then you do a boozy brunch and then, you know, you're just constantly adding and you lose money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was a real eye-opener because then I saw the cost come down,
mm-hmm.
one less person in the kitchen.
Yep.
Then I thought, oh, you know, I'm going to open a pop-up. So I opened up a pop-up store in Lygon Street.
Right.
With all our retail, all our Borex, all our pastries, I've always thought, oh, we could put the Aleppo, we've got this dish on that's like an eggplant pickly thing with eggs and pickled cabbage and chilies and that stuff I put in a jar.
Wow.
I put my harissa in a jar, put my, you know, sumac, my dukkah, everything in a jar and I put them on the shelf at this pop-up and it went well for about 6 weeks and then COVID happened. And then
right. So you're doing that before COVID. So you're doing all this stuff that we now, like a lot of brands did during COVID in order to stay afloat.
Set up an online store as well.
Wow.
So I was so like, I don't know, lucky.
Progressive.
Maybe progressive, I was like, because it wasn't working. So I wanted to see if this was the angle. So I thought I'll do a pop-up and see if this, you know, if this concept of our products, of our pastries will, is the ticket, you know?
Sure, sure.
And it was working, yeah. It was good.
Can I ask, like, correct me if I'm wrong, I imagine when you've made all these changes, like the first couple of days, like there would have been some scaredness in you for making these changes, like am I making the right decisions and that kind of stuff. I'd imagine I certainly would be if I made those calls. How did you get through that time of the business changing the business model and moving forward with something that you knew would actually work?
I feel like a lot of the changes I implement are already in my head for a really long time.
Sure.
So I'm sitting on them for ages.
Yeah.
You know, they're just not executed. So when I do them, I feel like I'm confident.
Right.
I feel like I'm ready because I've really done my head in.
Sure.
You know, for a while.
Mm-hmm.
For the pop-up, I was, you know, there was nerves there.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kept doing my thing.
Sure.
I really don't like to copy or think, you know, someone else next door is doing this. I better do that, you know, to keep up or whatever. I just try to stay in my lane, like, and just be confident that, like,
you can execute.
Do it because that's what I know.
Mm-hmm.
If I start trying to do things I don't know, that's when I'll get nervous, like doing, you know, boozy brunch, like stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or doing, you know, really fine dining meals or nights or stuff. It's just, it's not my jam anymore. It's not who I am. I don't. That makes me nervous, and I think when you're nervous, that's what stops you being successful.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, because you don't know if you're really, you're not confident in your approach moving forward and people can almost kind of feel that.
They can feel it. They know. They're like, do you know what you're doing?
Yeah.
Not to, like, I'm not a total, you know, spaz. Like, you know, I sort of feel like, no, this is good.
Yeah,
and especially sitting with Leon after doing all that work, I felt really confident that, you know, straight away I saw changes that were positive. So, I was really happy with that.
That outcome.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Then COVID happened and it was a mess.
So let's talk about that. You've got a pop-up store, you've done an online store, you've changed the look and feel and flow of Baba John. Like,
I hadn't renovated yet. No.
Okay.
No.
So what sort of happened those are first, you know, official couple of days at the end of March and stuff? Like, how did you, you know, as a leader with inside this business, as an owner with inside this business, like, how did you cope with that? What were the first couple things you did?
Yeah, it was really hard. I remember the Saturday or the Saturday before the Sunday when it got announced, everyone was panicking. All the staff were scared.
Yes.
I was freaking out. And I just, that Saturday, I had closed the pop-up as well.
Right.
So one of my girls was French, was running it, and she was like, I have to go, like, I can't be here. It's too scary. I think maybe her sister might have had it back in France. So she already had – France was first. So she already was like had more info on it than we did.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I'm just going to close it. If she can't run it, I'm just going to close it.
Right.
I saw the numbers dropping in the 2 weeks prior. So I took all – because I knew – I thought, you know what, I'm just going to flip Baba John. On the Saturday Arvo, I got the – when we emptied one shop, I brought it all into Baba John. I took the tables and chairs to my house.
Yeah.
And I flipped the shop with the 4 square meter and I put the shelves in. I put all the retail in there.
Wow.
So I was half ready.
Yes. Yeah.
On Saturday afternoon. Like,
wow.
Then I came in. I didn't sleep all night because I was nervous. You're
so worried.
Yeah. I was like, have I made the right decision? I've got 12 seats in here or 10 seats in here.
Yes.
Everyone's going to walk in and go, what the hell's just happened? Because we hadn't had an announcement yet. We were just sort of pre.
Yes. Customer's going to think that you know something more than they know.
It was very worrying. And one of the chefs was like, I walked in and I hadn't slept and I think I must have been just in a daze. Like I walked in the morning and after about 5 minutes, he's like, you haven't even said good morning. And I was like, what? I was like, he's like, well, you haven't even said, like, I think I must have said something about a dish or the counter or something.
Right, but you hadn't.
And I hadn't even, like, said hello.
Yes.
And I was like, I'm fucking sorry. Like, you know, I have not slept. I'm, like, trying my best to make sure you have a job tomorrow.
Yes, literally.
Like, literally, yes. I want to keep, you guys are stressed and freaking out. I am freaking out.
Mm.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
Like, I am human too.
Yes.
And I just bawled my eyes out because I was just like, this is crazy. Because no one knew what the hell was going on. And then after about 2 hours, I sat him down. I said, look, if you can't handle this,
yeah,
j- just finish, just go.
Yes.
We'll be right.
Yeah.
If you need to go home, he was from England. I said, if you need to get on a plane and get out of here,
sure,
you go.
Yes.
But don't do that because we're all freaking out. Like, yeah. Not just you.
Yes. Yeah. The whole team is in the same all boat
of us.
Right now.
Yeah. All of us don't know what the hell is going on. So that was, you know, that was that. And then the Monday was the announcement. And when we just did it from the window. So we just.
Right. So closed up the whole shop completely.
Closed the whole shop. Mm. We just served from the window. We put pastries on the bench, you know, at the window. And we just said, let's hope for the best. And it was, I said, if we make $2,000 a day, you know, with the team I've got, we'll be okay.
Sure.
You know,
yep.
we'll make it work.
Yep.
Okay. And then obviously then more staff started leaving. So I had French, I had English, I had Indian, I had Nepalese.
Yes. And their whole choice was to go home rather than ride it out.
Yep.
And was, do you
I had
think
a few people stay. Like, right. Two Indians stayed.
Yep.
But all my French left, all of them, and the English left.
Right.
Yep.
Can I understand their reasoning for that? Because I'm curious if it was the government, government not supporting them, or was it just the fact they wanted to get to their family?
They stayed for this. I had a couple that were amazing, and they stayed for about 2 weeks after the announcement. But it was so uncertain. They didn't know if I was going to survive.
Sure,
if they were going to have a job.
Yeah, of course.
And if they could get back home and when they could get back home.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, fair enough.
Yeah.
So we've really like gone through a 360 with crew, with concept.
Yes.
With emotions. I mean, everybody has, but
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Because then you did a new fit out of the store during first lockdown or second lockdown?
Second lockdown. Before the second lockdown.
Right. Okay.
So I couldn't, and this is just who I am. My brain just, it's like when I walk inside my house, if I see cat hair, I start sweeping and mopping, you know, like I can't relax. And in the shop, it was horrendously a mess. Like you couldn't walk in, but for people working, it was, you know, bench seats and chairs on top of chairs and shelving and mess everywhere, you know, like you couldn't walk into the toilet and I can't work like that.
Yeah.
You know, my canisters, my veins have to be perfectly
aligned,
right? Like it's, other chefs think I'm crazy. I was like, don't touch my shit.
Yes. I'm the same. That's fine.
I don't touch my shit, man. It's crazy. Like I know that I have, you know, some issues. I acknowledge that. So I couldn't handle it. Like I was like, you know what? I'm going to – it's working.
Sure.
You know, what we're doing is working in this way.
Yeah.
We're still paying our bills. We're, you know, it's okay. Mm-hmm. So I started planning a reno. My friend's graphic designer, she did some plans for me.
Yep.
And I've got a friend that's a builder and he's like, I'll, you know, tell you who I've got. You can use them. And I just got it all organized and within 5 days they fitted it out.
Wow.
And we ran the shop while that was happening. I got a coffee cart that I put in the front of the shop.
So good.
Well, because I was like, I still have to pay my bills.
Yeah, 100%.
And people are still going to come.
Yes.
Like they've got nowhere else there. They're still going to come and get their coffee. They're going to come eat their sandwiches. Still going to come here.
Yeah.
So I changed it to a different window and I put the coffee cart there. And everyone made it work. Everyone at that point was, I feel like everyone's lost that now, but definitely at the time, all the staff were really accommodating.
Sure. Super supportive.
That. Yeah, through that. Now they're back on their
their normality.
I want, you know, train. So, you know.
Yeah.
But they've forgotten.
What did you notice about your customers that was different during that time?
Look, I've got pretty loyal customers. I probably got more
new
ones, but then I lost some too.
Sure.
I lost a lot of people moving away and stuff. But they were all very ready to be there and support us and check in, a lot of checking in and are you okay? And you know, there was a lot of those conversations.
Yeah, I bet.
It was constant. But, you know, I just remember just sitting in front of the TV every time the news was on and crying, you know, just it was really hard. And thinking I'm okay, but then I'm bloody crying at, you know, all the stories and, you know, just what I have to go through, what I have to change,
Yeah, what you have to do as a leader.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You're on top. You have. They look at you like you have to make this decision. They're waiting for you.
Yeah. I think the other thing that we haven't fully comprehended during lockdown time is how much cafes helped people's mental health. Mm. And I think we have a situation around the world in which we don't fully comprehend how much pubs, restaurants and cafes, especially because people go to them every day normally, how much they're important, that interaction is important for someone's mental health. Do you think a lot of your customers were coming to you because they needed that positive interaction, especially when like they could only go out an hour a day, like during 100%. That time?
Yeah, right. It was definitely that's why I think we were so busy through that period, because sure. people made the most of that hour or two at the time to have a chat and connect.
Sure.
Because it wasn't, you know, and that's why even now people are still the same.
Yeah.
The customers are the ones that are loyal and that we've had for a long time. You know, they're there for us. Mm. And that's their ritual.
Yeah.
That is their ritual.
Yes.
But I mean, we all have our rituals and it makes us, you know, relaxed and calm and
true.
Routine is, we love it.
Yeah.
I love routine.
Me too.
I love going to bed at 8:30 at night every day.
I love it.
And my glass of wine, you know.
Did you find as well that we talked a bit last week when we caught up, like, do you think the industry's become closer during this time, especially the Melbourne sort of hospitality industry? Did you find that it was easy for you to connect with maybe people you wouldn't have connected with before?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Well, I mean, like for me and Elementari, we've reconnected and, you know, I remember when, because we had a COVID case.
Oh, wow.
And we had to close and, you know, clean and another hurdle, another stressful, like, oh, it was intense. And, you know, and Linda was right there, you know, ringing, are you okay? What do you need?
Yep.
You know, lots of people were.
Yes.
And I think that has continued definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Like having a bit more of a, less of an ego and more of a, like.
Supportive.
Yeah, we're a community, you know, we're all in the same boat because we know, we actually really know.
Yes.
How hard it is.
Yes.
It's not just like a superficial, oh, you know, are you okay? Or
yeah.
I know how hard it is. It's
sure.
It's the reality. They know.
Yes.
Not just through COVID, just small business.
Sure, sure. It's like a how are you, not how are you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's a difference in the way you say that kind of stuff, right?
100%. So she was, you know, great. And Leon, amazing. I remember lots of chats with him. Not as often because, you know, we would catch up and have a chat every 2 weeks, you know.
Wow.
Or we would, you know, I'd come to, at one point I was using their kitchen to bake a primary, you know, the Auntie Peg's kitchen.
Oh, yes.
So we would, I'd see him all the time. so, yeah, just then after, you know, through COVID it wasn't as much, but he was always there. Whenever I said, hey, are you around, he was always there. So there was lots of people that, you know, were giving me their time. It was good.
How do you think we keep that as an industry? Because I'm super worried that, and it's probably one of the reasons why I do the podcast, like I'm super worried that some elements of that will be naturally lost, but I'm worried that maybe it all will be lost, like all these positive things. And that's sort of my next question for you, like what the positive things are moving forward. Like how do you think we keep those things live?
Oh, it's a hard one. Yeah. Well, I think we have to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, I think we have not just industry people, but maybe as an industry we have to be more honest.
Yes.
And more like say what we want or say what we need.
Sure.
And say that's, you know, we can't do that or, you know, and then if we're all aligned and we're all having got the same sort of vocal point, you know, we're all saying, no, that's, like, you know, the public holiday thing.
Yes. Yeah.
More and more and more venues are not opening.
Yeah.
So I think if we all stay, you know, together and we go, okay, yeah, as an industry, we can't do that anymore.
Yep.
Which keeps us connected.
Yes. Yeah, it's true.
You know, to say, oh, yeah, no, I agree because I know how hard that is to do that or that or that.
Yeah.
You know, instead of, it's like, you know, people undercutting and doing the specials or the, you know, the cheaper coffee or the, I've never been a sales, like a person that does specials or like, you know, it's coffee and a muffin.
It's
the coffee. Yeah,
$6 and a coffee and a muffin.
The muffin. Yeah. Yes. It's not coffee and a muffin.
Yes. It's not a combo.
No. But lots of places. So I feel like as we ride this next wave, because there's going to be major changes after all the payments stop.
Yes.
We're already seeing it, sadly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think if as an industry we are honest and we stay together on the decisions that we make, maybe that will keep us connected better.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Yeah. Well, I feel like, you know, if you're – even if you're a busy place like me or Alimentari or all of the, you know, Shane Delia's and, you know, if we're all doing it, people are going to go, oh, that's – Why are they doing that?
Yes.
And then understanding why and asking why?
Yes. So do you think it's the consumers actually, like if every cafe in Carlton North is closed over Easter because they can't afford to pay a barista over $45 an hour for a public holiday, for a casual rate, like do you think then a consumer goes, they're either pissed off, and then after they're pissed off they go, well, why is that happening? And then, you know, they maybe ask you or ask the cafe down the road in a couple of weeks why that's happening. And then it's about information, and then, you know, we figure out what to do about it. Because does that mean maybe you can trade, but coffees are $6.50?
Yeah. Well, I think then that information will filter, hopefully, because I don't think and I'm not, you know, that informative on, you know, numbers and government sort of policies and stuff, but I don't think they have anyone on the ground that really understands what small business owners need.
100%.
So once if we start aligning, you know, because we don't have a union, and you know, and I don't really believe in unions, but I still think we need to be aligned. And if that is one voice, and then that's going further to the top, then they might start to listen. You know, because councils don't do anything for us. They don't have any power.
No.
So
outside of a health inspection, they don't do anything.
They don't do anything, you know. So, yeah, hopefully we can sort of connect a little bit on our business goals and what's best for our industry long term, because right now we've been really just everyone and anyone doing what we do, thinking they can do it, and then they're closed in a year or 2 years. And in that period you've also – hurt other businesses in that time.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know. Hopefully we can connect
long
term for a greater good for our industry.
Yeah. I want to ask your opinion on one more thing before I get into the normal final question. Because I know you're going to give me an honest answer on this.
Okay.
What do you think? Over the last couple of weeks, I've been listening to a lot of people in the hospitality industry on a global scale as things open back up, right? And of course, we've been open, and maybe not Melbourne, but the rest of Australia's been open a bit longer, right? Staffing crisis. So around the world, we're seeing the same things come up. US, UK, Europe can't get staff inside venues to work again like we did before. Do you think that's a result of, like, as you were talking about at the start of the podcast, like a lot of your staff are French or you know, Spanish or Indian or Nepalese? Like, do you think it's the fact that those people are home, are concentrating on their family and don't feel safe leaving at the moment? Do you think that's the staffing issue, that the reason why we can't get the amount of staff at the moment is foreign workers, or do you think there's something else that's at play?
I think that's probably part of it.
Yeah.
Because if they're having the same issues, then it's across the board.
Yeah.
I think everyone thinks that they can open a cafe or a restaurant.
Yes.
Which is insulting to me. Like literally the lashes girl that did my lashes yesterday was just like, oh yeah, me and my husband, you know, really want to open a cafe. We love having coffee and, you know, pastries. I was like, keep it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, I said, what's your husband do? She's like, he's an engineer. I said, like, I don't say I'm going to go and build a bridge, right?
Yeah. Yes. Like, yes. Great point.
It's insulting.
Yeah. Great point.
That you think
it's so easy.
It's so easy because it's not. So I think because we have so many venues open, we need to make it harder for people to, we need to highlight our industry and our education.
Yeah.
We haven't spent any money on like TAFEs, and we've cheapened our industry.
Yes.
With, as much as I love MasterChef and all that stuff,
yes,
we've made it, we've glorified it like anyone can be a chef.
Yes.
And I don't think that's the case.
Yes.
And I think we need to go from the from the bottom, like preschool, primary school, and home economics. You know, I've been speaking to my son's principal about the canteen.
Right.
So there's no education around food for young people anymore.
It's a great point.
So if we invest in passion and food from a young age and get them excited and understand, it's gonna, like, it's gonna take years to get us back to normal and have people that want to cook and want to be, want to know about wine and want to serve. And but I think it has, it's just been cheapened. It's not just the COVID, you know, staffing. People are still overseas. I don't think it's that. I think we've entitled our Australians by paying them too much for something that their education is not qualified for.
It's a good point. It's a really good point. Like, I think it's funny you should talk about MasterChef. I think you should call it Master Cook.
Yeah, it's
because,
really rude.
Because they're not chefs.
No.
Like, you can see when they're in service challenges how they struggle, right? Because
they're
not used to it.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference in doing a service for 200 pack rather than, you know,
20 plates or 10 plates.
That's it.
Or your dinner party.
Or a dinner party or styling something so you can take a picture of it and do a cookbook. It's super interesting.
Yeah, like, so I'm really passionate about trying to get that system back into. I did look at Stephanie Alexander's website, and I did flag that with the principal of Corey's school, because I just think, but then she's bound by funding and space in the school where they can do it, and there's a massive oval where they could do it, but she's not allowed to use it.
Right.
So there's so much like politics around. We just want to get our kids educated about fundamentals again. So it grows and it filters, like, you know, kids eat so bad, and you know, the healthy options in the canteen are like a sausage and bread or a dim sim or like shit.
Yes. Yeah.
So we're not teaching them right from the start. That's why we don't have an industry that's strong anymore.
Yes.
We killed it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a slow and painful death.
It shows COVID to show it.
It
has. So it's going to take another 10 years of really hard work of, you know, fueling people's passion for food again and wanting to cook, not just be a master chef,
like, not just get the glory.
It doesn't work like that.
There's a
a bit of a
thanks for asking
opinion about
thanks
that.
For answering that question. That was fantastic answer. Don't be sorry at all. It needed to be said. What about TAFEs? Like, you know how we said at the start that you went through hotels, and obviously you referred to Anna's podcast.
Yeah.
And we talked about hotels as well. It's something I've been sort of dropping in on certain podcasts, and the fact that I feel that hotels in the 80s and 90s, and obviously before that, but 80s and 90s especially, grew a lot of chefs. And I don't feel that's happening right now with education in TAFEs. And you're saying to me that you're feeling that chefs can't look at 10 ingredients and know what to do for a menu. What do you think we need to do?
I still have an old teacher that still works at William Anglis, and a few people that, like, that's where I went to trade school.
Yes.
I think we need to, we used to have guest chefs come in. Like, I remember in third year we had Greg Maloof.
Yep.
We had Andrew Blake.
Yeah, right.
Back then.
Wow.
I don't think that maybe they're bringing in, maybe they don't have the budget for it. I don't know. I think it's down to money. I don't think they have money to invest in the students anymore. And I think because we've cheapened we've made it really expensive for visa holders to do it, but they don't want to do it. They're just doing it to stay in the country.
Yes. Yeah.
So the ones that are going through and paying it, they're not
passionate.
They don't love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it just comes back down to education from a young age. I feel like if we can get, you know, like, my son cooks and has a Japanese knife and cuts like a machine, he's 7.
Yeah, right.
Like,
yes.
If we're investing in young children now,
yeah. Yeah.
It will flow on to them wanting to go to TAFE.
Yes.
And them hassling their teachers, hey, I saw this and I want to learn from this person. I want
yeah.
to
They want to get that skill.
They're not, so, you know, these students are, don't care.
Yeah.
Plus, they're not actually being educated properly. Like the way I've seen two of my chefs, they're like little cooks. They're learning there, but one's Turkish and one is Indian. And the way they're cutting, I was like, what are you doing? Stop.
Yes. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, my teacher told me this is how you do it. I said, put your shoulder down. Da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh. They're just, the teachers aren't qualified teaching.
So it's a whole chain reaction, right? You get a photocopy and a photocopy on a photocopy. Yeah. Yeah.
So how they were teaching them how to make stocks. I was like, how have you not, you don't do that. What are you doing?
Yeah.
No. Like, so I think it might be dependent on which TAFE college is better than the other and, you know, who's teaching there. But I don't think there's a lot of life in them.
Sure.
I remember driving past when I was like 16, you know, William Angus going, that's the school I want to go to.
Right.
Like, I want to go to that trade school.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Is there that same love that there is now?
Seems weird to say that, but like it just, I remember that moment. Like, I remember saying, I want to go to William Angus, like, because it was the best back then.
Right.
I don't know if it still is, but.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that I can't tell you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll find out.
I just wonder what we do as an industry, Kirsty, to like put pressure on that.
Yeah. It's a hard one. Because
like when I did my apprenticeship in baking, like, I feel there was designated training and going to TAFE and learning, you know, lamination and learning, you know, croissant and proper bread making and sourdough bread making and stuff like that. And that was exciting to me. But I don't feel there's a lot of okay cooks in our industry who are doing as best they possibly can, probably. But there's just not that level of training and skill like there used to be.
Is that the government? I don't know. Is that the government changing, you know, how they charge?
Yeah.
I know when they changed the apprenticeship to 3 years, I was really, I was like, why did you do that? Like,
yes.
It needs to be
four. There's a lot to go through.
It needs to be. And it depends on where you work. Like, that should be.
That's a great point.
You know, I was like, trade school's great.
Yes.
But it's also where you work, where you invest your time.
Yes.
Like, you need to go and choose those places that you want to work at. You can't just work in one place for 4 years doing the same thing in a average place and expect to be great.
Yes, I agree.
You need to put in the time. That's anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and this thing about overtime, and Anna was speaking the same thing. Yeah. And I agree. Like, obviously people need to get paid their worth.
Yes.
But the government has made that worth very hard for small business owners to pay.
Agree.
So, yes, you know, like, that's another issue.
Yeah.
We don't. I wanted to stay at work. Like, I wanted to learn. I wanted to do the ice carvings when I was a second year apprentice.
That's a great point.
I wanted to stay late.
Yes.
I wanted to learn how to make ice cream.
Yes. Because you wanted to learn.
I wanted to do. I was saying to my chef, I want to go into the hot section. He's like, you're not ready. I was like, I don't care. I want to learn. I want to do functions. I want to do pastry.
Yeah.
There's. If you're not in the right place, you need to go and find something that's feeding that love. I feel like it just keeps coming back to passion and fueling that passion and that education. And I don't know how we change it. I really don't. It's a long haul.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of different facets is what we just talked about for the last whatever part of that conversation was. But I think governments are now seeing education, and this goes for higher education and universities, as an industry too much.
Yeah. And
what I've seen is an important part of actually skilling people, skilling humans.
Yeah.
And that can't continue to cost exorbitant amounts of money or have poor quality training. It doesn't make
charge
any sense.
Charge it, but give them the best.
Of course.
Like, the same as, you know, your accountant charges you and your, you know, the building that you've paid for. And, you know, like,
100%.
Charge it.
Yes.
But give me the freaking best, like the plate of food.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Develop an industry of people who can actually cook properly.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And love it.
Yeah. And love it. Love what you do.
It's important.
Yeah.
It's important. My last question to you as we talk about love is, what are you looking forward to most this year?
Change.
In what way?
Business.
Yep.
And lifestyle.
Right.
Yeah. I next for me is my priorities. Me, my health, and my son.
Yeah.
And business third.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'll close a day to give me the life that I need.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to change and making decisions that are going to bring the change.
Yeah.
There's some stuff happening. So, yeah, fingers crossed it all goes the way I want.
But are you looking for other venues or other pop-ups or anything like that if I can ask you?
I'm looking for support. I'm looking for business support.
Right.
So I can make some changes, whether that's I don't particularly think it's another venue because I don't want to hire more staff because there are none.
Yep.
I would love to there's some things I want to work on, maybe like all my retail product. I really want to branch out with my retail and and build on that.
Yep.
I've been working with Colab Pantry. I think they're great. I think they're amazing.
Danielle and the team are fantastic.
They're so good. They're so on the money and their reach is amazing.
Yes.
They've just done so well.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're just such nice people.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry really to cut sweet. You off.
Yeah, no, they are. They're really nice. Yeah. They're really genuine.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yeah.
I love people like that where there's not, it's not a sales pitch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You don't want anything. Like if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. You're still going to be normal and fine.
Yes.
That's like Leon. And, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing.
So I think building on the retail would be a really good part.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I talk about opening another place, you know, in the burbs because it's like I live in Deer Park and you cannot get good coffee. I drive to Footscray or West Footscray to get my coffee if I have a day off.
Wow.
Yeah. Like,
wow. Okay.
And so I'm like, oh, you know, it would be great to open a place near my house. And
just
do my paint, just do Babajan.
In sure.
But that's, I don't want to do it by myself.
Yeah. It's tough, right?
Yeah. I don't want to do it by myself.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I can do it and I think it would work, but
yeah, I agree.
I don't want to do it on my own because it's just more time from my life and my and Corey and I want to go to the gym. I want to see my mates.
Yep.
I want to
weekend occasionally.
I want to have a life like every single other person and if I have another business, I won't.
Yeah, for sure. And for what end? Like for what purpose? Yeah.
It's not going to make me a millionaire, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So
good for you.
I'll just sit tight for a while.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you do more things that more people can enjoy because, you know, from the little that we know about each other now, like we've obviously spent the last hour together, so we know a bit more, right?
Yeah.
But like I'm very much a believer in spaces in hospitality having a feeling. I think I shared this with you last week and just how much of a great feeling your venue has.
Oh,
and I think that obviously comes through the food. That I had that day, that your dips are fucking incredible, by the way. And the coffee was just on point.
Yeah.
And I think that needs to be shared more.
Yeah.
So I hope people like yourself like get the opportunity if they want it to share it more because I think that's a positive thing for all
Thank
of us.
Thank you so much.
What's the best way that people can find out about Babajan and where you guys are?
Well, Instagram and we've got an online store and a website.
Beautiful.
I personally don't do much on Instagram. I have someone do it because I can't. Everyone's good at something and that's not my forte. And they can just pop in. Yeah, there's lots to see, you know. You walk in and you're –
amazing place.
Yeah, like I said, I just want them to be overwhelmed when they walk in,
yeah,
you know. But, like, I have to have that.
Yes. Well, I definitely know I have to go back a lot more now.
Okay, good.
So that's a good thing.
Good.
Kirsty, thanks so much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thanks again for tuning into another episode of Principle of Hospitality, the podcast. We hope you really enjoyed this episode. Please comment, like, and share this podcast with your friends in the industry. We're making this content with the industry in mind, so we'd really appreciate you sharing along with those that you care about in the industry. Thanks as well to our sponsor, Chef's Hat, the largest family-owned and operated hospitality supplier in Australia. They strive to inspire cooks, chefs, bakers and bartenders to deliver the best product with the best tools every day. We're so proud to partner with them. That's where the industry shops. And if you don't know us at Poe, Sash, my co-founder from Principal Design, has one of the best design agencies in Australia. So if you're looking for anything around strategy, branding, digital design and graphic design, then you can find them at principaldesign.com.au and myself at Open Pantry Consulting for anything to do with hospitality operations, strategy and recruitment. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks to Chef's Hat for supporting us. And until next time, stay safe. Cheers.